The Film Salon has expanded its showings of classic and important films at the Alamo Drafthouse. You can now catch these special screenings on the first and third Saturdays of the month. This month's Film Salon kicks off tonight with a showing of The Night of the Hunter. Charles Horak is curator of the Film Salon's program and will continue to provide commentary before and after each film. Here to tell us about the expanded series and to preview his fall lineup is Charles Horak. Welcome to State of the Arts.
Hello. Good to see you again.
Good to see you too. So you're not busy doing anything, are you?
No, not at all. I'm just busy doing fun stuff.
Right.
This has really been a passion of mine, as you know, for many decades.
Yes, and this was quick because you've been at the Alamo Drafthouse almost a year now, or a year?
Right at a year. In June, it marks our 1 year that we've moved. 15 and a half years ago, I started down at Trinity First Methodist, where they had this groovy 50s-style chapel that I wasn't really being used. I turned into a little movie theater. And
I feel like you see everything in
right,
everything can
right.
be a movie
can
theater.
Can I show a movie on that surface? You know, as the Alamo was being built, they were reaching out to me and interested in what I was doing in all those years down there and
sure.
the audience I had built up for classic film and repertory film. And, you know, the conversation just kind of came around to, would you ever consider being here? And they've been a great host. The space is beautiful, obviously. The seats are nicer than the pews we were using.
I'm sure. Yeah, they're
more
not a
comfortable.
Complete 90-degree seat.
And for listeners that haven't been to the Alamo, they may not know that they have full drink and food wait staff, you know, and just amazing service there. So you can really make a night of it. So we've had a delightful time. The audience has built up. It's forced me to create a website and be on Facebook. So you can find us on Facebook at Film Salon, and you can find us on the web at filmsalon.org.
And so now you're going into two screenings per month.
That's right. One of the things to inaugurate our second year at the Alamo, we've had such a great response to what we always do, which is typically classic American films, though I do pepper in a few foreign titles so that people get their feet wet there. But the response has been fantastic. We've been filling their main theater, and some of the patrons, you know, were kind of asking around the edges, you know, well, do you ever do off the beaten path stuff? And I thought, I wonder if we could start a second series. So we meet the first Saturday of every month religiously at 6:30. If it's a super long film, we might push that back a little bit. But now we have a second screening series that just started that is the third Saturday of each month. So mm-hmm. you can just mark your calendar, always know there's something interesting going on, even if you don't know the title yet, or go to the website, filmsalon.org, and you can see what's coming up. Right now, we're really trying something different than what we've been showing, which is a series of three films by Japanese New Wave director Seijin Suzuki, who happens to be a favorite of mine. But these films are really out there, and he was really attacking the way classic Japanese cinema was working in the 60s and breaking down a lot of barriers and mixing things up, and was famously fired for getting a little too far outside the lines. But these are marvelous films full of all of the potential of cinema, and they are in Japanese, so we're doing that. And Mr. Suzuki just died earlier this year in February, so I thought it would be a good way to celebrate his life and turn a lot of people on to a director they may have never heard of or films they've never seen. In fact, at the last screening, we had one person in the audience that had ever seen a Suzuki film. So,
but that says a lot for you. Because
it's really cool to
we're trusting you
on.
To
hopefully
to curate something that, okay, it's going to be weird, but Charles says
right.
it's okay, so we're going in.
So the flip side of that is the main series, which is we've actually got a screening tonight, first Saturday. Today's our July 1st kickoff. We've been looking at a couple films by Robert Mitchum, who would have been 100 this year. This is a centennial year. And this is a very different film. And in fact, one of the greatest films of American cinema that most people don't know and have never seen, The Night of the Hunter from 1955. And it's unusual in so many ways. And certainly in Mitchum's career, at that point, he was a huge A-list star, but really known for playing detectives and tough guys with this very laconic, almost half asleep eyes. Some critics thought he was a bit too inert. Well, he's anything but inert in this film. He's basically walking the backwoods of West Virginia, impersonating a preacher, and he's actually a serial killer and ex-con looking for a cache of money from a bank robbery that went awry. And he falls in with this widow and Shelley Winters, and mm-hmm. he ends up marrying her because he thinks that she knows something about where the money is. And he's terrorizing her two small children who he thinks also know where the money is. And I won't give too much of the plot away, but it's this and it's directed by Charles Laughton, who was a great actor, character actor, and British actor. And it's the only film he ever directed. And it is truly a masterpiece. It's just gorgeous to look at. He likened it to a sort of dark version of a Mother Goose fairy tale. A lot of the film follows these two small kids through these sort of a wonderland of Southern Gothic noir. Beautiful black and white cinematography, and has the amazing silent film star Lillian Gish in it, who finally comes head-to-head with Robert Mitchum, which is fascinating, seeing this little old lady with a shotgun go up against Robert Mitchum.
I love it. I love all of this.
Yeah, so people are in for a treat. A lot of people don't know the film, but it consistently ranks among some of the greatest ever made in America, and it is part of the National Film Library as well.
Very cool. Okay, so you've been working on this new series, and let's see how many titles we can get through to kind of preview what you got coming up.
Well, tonight we've covered The Night of the Hunter, and July 15th, which will be the third Saturday of July, we're going to watch our second Seijin Suzuki film, a film he made in 1966 called Tokyo Drifter. He really specialized in gangster films, which were very popular at the time. They were called Yakuza films over in Japan, but heavily influenced by American cinema. So we talk a lot about that in the introduction and the dialogue we have after the screenings. I mean, I'll be quizzing people about what they picked out that might be American about these. But this is another gangster film set in modern age 60s urban Japan.
It sounds amazing.
Really exciting.
Just the visuals alone. Yeah. I'd like to see what they're wearing in this film.
Yeah, it's really cool, really hip. So you got to come out for that. And then we're going to wrap things up in August 19th with Branded to Kill, which was his final film at Nikkatsu before he was fired and blacklisted for a decade for making what the producers thought were incomprehensible films.
So was it that film that just broke
that? That is the one, Branded to Kill. And you know, amazing output. These B-movies that were being made, he made 40 films for Nikkatsu in 12 years. I mean,
That's a lot of filmmaking.
1 year, I think 1961, he made 6 films.
You know, for someone they don't like, they really let him do a whole
bunch
of stuff.
Well, they made money. You know, there was a big audience for these B-gangster movies over there. And he was one of those fascinating characters in the cinema that just got sick of the formulas he was having to grind out and just started experimenting. And the experiments he made were just wild and crazy. And now he's recognized as a really important figure in world cinema. But at the time, you know,
he was just crazy.
Yeah, they had had enough by 68. So you're not working in this town again. Now, this fall, when we wrap up with the Mitchum tonight, with The Night of the Hunter, we're going to kick off a new series. I like to program things in 3, 4, 5 month blocks. And I've been wanting to do this for some years, but we're going to do it finally this fall. So in August, on August 5th, we're going to watch The Magnificent Seven from 1960. And we're not doing Westerns. I'm showing this because it's a way to get people to watch Akira Kurosawa films, another Japanese director really considered probably the most prominent. If you ask people if they know a Japanese director, it would be Kurosawa.
Anyone who has to take a film class has to come across one of these.
Right. So what we're going to look at is 3 of his films, but also interspersed with those several films that were basically direct ripoffs or remakes of his films. So we're going to start with The Magnificent Seven, an American Western from 1960. Then the next month, September 2nd, we're going to see his epic Seven Samurai, which is the route that The Magnificent Seven comes from. Then October 7th, we're going to watch the Italian Western, A Fistful of Dollars, which most people know is the film that really launched Clint Eastwood's big screen career. And from that point on, he was an iconic star. But A Fistful of Dollars by director Sergio Leone is a direct remake of one of Kurosawa's films from the early 60s, Yojimbo, which is about this samurai drifter that comes through a town that's being held hostage basically between two rival gangs, and he pits each against the other and frees the town of their grip. But
was the music as important in the Japanese films as it is in the Westerns?
Not as much as we think of in the Italian Westerns, the spaghetti Westerns, you know, those great Ennio Morricone scores that are just iconic. I don't think most people could hum the tunes from a Kurosawa film from this age, but they do have wonderful music. And they are very Western in a way. Kurosawa was very familiar with American cinema, and after the war, there was a lot of American cinema being shown in the 40s and 50s in Japan. So he was aware of the conventions. Oftentimes, he's thought of as, you'll see people write about him as the most Western of Japanese directors. And I think that's a bit of a misnomer. They're clearly Japanese films and steeped in Japanese history and tradition. But I like to think of Kurosawa and his popularity around the world as coming from the fact that he was making stories that had a universal appeal. Right. They were very Japanese, but they were universal. And then we're going to wrap things up in December with The Hidden Fortress from 1958, which is the film that heavily influenced George Lucas and Star Wars.
Most
people don't know that. So Star Wars, the next installment, opens in theaters in December. So I thought we'll wrap up this Kurosawa series with looking at the film that inspired George Lucas originally.
Well, congratulations. Year two. Two screenings. I don't know if year three means three screenings. I mean, at what point do you break?
I don't know. I'm getting right. That may be a bit much for me. And the beauty is it's so inexpensive. You know, it's $3 and people can come out and enjoy some of the greatest films ever made and hopefully learn a few things. I do, as you mentioned, do an introduction.
I learned a whole lot just sitting with you right now, you know, and just
then my job here is done.
Yeah, drops the mic. See you later.
It's all about education. It really is about education for me and turning people on to cinema.
It's true. And, you know, your knowledge, your passion and all that comes through. And thank goodness you're doing it twice a month now. So we got to get our Japanese directors on. And if we're all curious, visit thefilmsalon.org and you can get all the information you ever want.
And Facebook.
That's
right. Hope to see some folks, some new faces tonight. Tonight's a great one to come out. If you've never been to the Film Salon, it's a good way to dip your toe.
All right. Well, today my guest has been Charles Horak, who is doubling his Film Salon screenings at the Alamo Drafthouse. Thank you so much for coming to State of the
Arts. Thank you.